Good morning. You know, this is pretty cool. You get to do this twice. I don't think I've ever been to two services in one Sunday morning at a time, but it's a blessing to listen to these worship team and participate in that. I tell you what, it's been a blessing over my lifetime to be able to listen to some of the what I call the top preachers in the country, whether it be Max Licato, whether it may be Rick Warren, Bill Hybels, John Maxwell, who are all very good. But I'm here to tell you that our own Mike Martindale is just as good as those guys, and we are blessed to have Mike and his family. So, you owe me so big time. You owe me so big time. Well, I must say, I mean, we talk about when the going gets tough. I was kind of surfing the net, and I just don't do that very much because I'm too busy to do that typically. But I just happened to be on there, and I looked at a survey. You know how those surveys about what people think about different professions and different people and what their approval rating is? Well, okay, I'm a banker, and I looked at bankers' approval rating. The approval rating was 6%. That means 94% disapproved of my profession, which means that out of 10 of you, only half of you approve what I do. That is just messed up. When the going gets tough. We've all been through tough times. Even King David speaks of tough times in Psalms, the 23rd chapter, verse 4. David talks about walking through the valley of the shadow of death. Now, you may not be walking through death right now, but maybe you're walking through the death of a loved one. You may be walking through a divorce. You may walk through the valley of an illness that you're suffering with. You may walk through the valley of a job that you absolutely can't stand, of a boss who may be a jerk to you. You may be walking through the struggles and tough times with a spouse. You're struggling in your marriage. You may be struggling with your kids or a family member, but it doesn't matter. We've all walked through those different valleys at some point of the time or another. We're going to use the 23rd Psalm today as our platform to look at how to handle maybe tough times as Christians and how to better handle those. We're going to look at two verses in particular, verse 1 and verse 4. The very first verse is, "The Lord is my shepherd." David was the author of this Psalm 23, and he had called God many names over his time. He had called him his strong tower, his refuge, his shelter, and his shield. But in this particular time, he calls God his shepherd. David knew a lot about being a shepherd because he was one as a young boy. He understood very intimately what it meant to take care of a flock of sheep and the responsibilities to do that. Now, it doesn't take a great stretch to understand that a shepherd is like that. He's somebody who watches over us. But I think maybe what we don't get in the concept of God is my shepherd is the fact that they refer to us as sheep. Now, it's probably not the most flattering animal to be referred to. Sheep are just about dumber than dirt, okay? From all the farmers that I've talked to, sheep are just not very smart. In fact, on the intelligence scale, they're just a little smarter than a cockroach. And quite frankly, a cockroach has better survival skills than a sheep does. But we have to understand that. First thing we want to talk about is that the danger with sheep, that's us, is not that we don't know we are not as smart as the shepherd. Because as us, and as it relates to God is, that's not a great stretch either. I understand I'm not as smart as God. In fact, any of you out there think that you're smarter than God? You're delusional and you need medication. That's not a great stretch. But the danger is that thinking that we are just smart enough. We begin to think in our own minds that we can take care of the small stuff. And then I'll let God take care of all that big stuff. But the problem with that is, from an eternal perspective, from God's own perspective, how do we know what the small stuff and what the big stuff is? We don't have a clue because we don't see from God's perspective. We need to let God be our shepherd. But the most important part of that is that we got to admit that we're sheep in the first place and need it. Now, there is one good thing about being referred to as a sheep. Low expectations. And you're thinking, God's got low expectations of me? Well, let me explain. I've got two kids. Jeff's sitting right there, and my daughter Chelsea lives in Dallas. Love them with all my heart. Not a thing that I would not do for them. But at one point in time in their life, they were 2 years old. And my expectations about them being good, especially Jeff, was about zero. But even though my expectations were zero to them, it did not mean that I did not love them very much, that I did not care for them. Even when they messed up, it did not change how I felt about them because I knew what their nature was. God knows that you're going to mess up. And it's a concept we've got to understand. There's too many of us here to think that the bar is too high to jump. I can't jump over the bar. That's why Jesus came to this earth to die for our sins. So we don't got to jump the bar. And we don't have to worry about that anymore. Now, I'm not sitting there telling you that God likes it when we mess up. It's just that He understands that you will. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, before we talk about why we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, two quick things. First thing is that everything's about faith. I don't care where you go, it's all about faith. Now, as it relates to the tough times that we're talking about here is, faith has to do with what do you believe about God, what He will do, and what He will not do for you. That's what faith is, as we talk about it here. And understand, when we say you have great faith, your great faith won't get you around problems. That's not why God gave us faith. But your faith will help get you through the problems, not around them. And the other thing is, even though I walk through the valley. See, so many of us think it's a sprint when the tough times come. I just say a few prayers and whew, I'm done with my tough time. It just doesn't work like that. Sometimes it takes a long time. And there are some of you today here that have been in your valley a long time, and you can't see the end. But the good news is God sees the end for you, and He knows where it is. So why do we even have to go through difficult times? First one, consequences. When we act like sheep, and we do dumb things. Greatest example. Had a lady happen to come to my office for financial counseling. And here's what she said to me. She says, Mike, I'm going through some spiritual struggles with my finances. God's put me through this time of trial with my finances. And I said, okay. So I looked at her finances. Here's what I found out. She made $5,000 and she was spending $7,000. I told her, your problem is not spiritual. It's mathematical. It has nothing to do with that. God did not put you in that situation. You spend more than you make, you're going to have troubles. Kids, you don't study for tests, you may not pass it. You don't work hard in your job and do what you're supposed to do, you may get fired. God has nothing to do with it. That's an honest consequence of what we go through when we mess up. You don't work at your relationship with your spouse, you're probably going to have trouble. You don't bring up your kids in the way that they should go, you're probably going to have some trouble. But see, this is where the concept of God as shepherd is so cool. That even though we mess up bad and we're walking through that valley, God's still with us. He does not abandon you, even when you do dumb stuff. He's still there with you. Probably not going to take the consequence away from you, but to know that He's still there. Our only hope is that dumb is not permanently tattooed, that maybe it wipes off from time to time. Next thing, we go through difficult times. To teach or to prepare. Now see, God may be teaching you something when you go through a tough time. I don't know what it may be. It may be patience. I used to pray for patience. Every time I pray for patience, I get this trial in my life. And I'm going, God, what's up with that? And He goes, do you want to learn patience or not? So I just quit praying for patience. But the other one is God is trying to prepare us. We'll read James 1:2 and Romans 5:3. Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. But we also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance, character, and character, hope, in Romans 5:3. The main reason, as God is preparing us for greater things, is number three. And it's to draw us closer to Him. Everything, the purposes that we go through, whether it's us being dumb and doing dumb things, whether He's teaching us or preparing us, ultimately, His ultimate goal is that He honestly wants to be closer to us. And when do we get closer to God? During the good times? Probably not. Because in our own mind, we don't think we need God. We can do it ourselves. It's those tough times when they come up that we draw closer to God. 1 Peter 5:7 says, cast all your anxiety on Him because He cares for you. This is a cool verse. You see, when we go through trials, when we go through the dark valley, pain is inevitable, but misery is optional. Do you get that? God has never said that we got to be miserable. You see, when we walk through the trials, God doesn't want us to have misery. He just wants us to learn a lesson. He wants us to teach us, to better prepare us. And He says, when you go through it, cast your anxiety to Me. Give it to Me. Actually, the Greek word for cast is to throw. Throw it at Me and give it to Me because I care enough about you to take all of your anxiety. And the fourth one, of why we go through difficult times, that it's not about us, but it's about others. This one's tougher to understand. You're telling me that I've got to go through a tough time because of someone else? I mean, that's not fair. Why should I have to go through a trial for somebody else? Man, how do you know who the trial is for? It may be for your child. It may be for your spouse. It may be for a friend. It may be for somebody that you don't know or even have a clue about. But I am convinced of this, that when we get to heaven one day, that you're going to get a tap on the shoulder. And you're going to look around and somebody's going to say, thank you. You're going to go, for what? He said, I am here today in heaven in great part because of you. And you go, why? He said, because when you went through your trial, when you went through the dark valley, you didn't gripe, you didn't complain, and you weren't bitter. And there was something different in you. You seemed to walk in joy. Not that you were happy about what is happening, but your mindset was one of joy. And it made a difference in my life. And I asked somebody, what's the difference? And they told me that you were a Christian. One day in heaven, somebody's going to get you and tell you about the influence that you were. You never know who may be looking at you at the time. I will fear no evil. At this point in time of David, as he wrote this, he didn't fear evil. He was very confident right now. But you read his other Psalms, and you find out that David was very afraid at times in his life. Which begs the question, is it, then why do I struggle sometimes when tough times come my way? Or, why is my faith in God stronger at times than at other times? And I think we've all been through that. Even the great men of God and great men of faith struggled at times. We're going to look at two of them. Elijah, when he faced off with the 450 prophets of Baal, along with the 450 prophets of Asherah, there were 900 of them. Elijah was tired of it. He said, it is time for a showdown. My God against your God. We're going to build two altars. We're going to put offerings on them. And we're going to call to our gods. And we're going to see who rains down fire from heaven to burn up our offerings. Well, all morning long, and they went first. The prophets of Baal went first. All morning long, they prayed, cut themselves, bleeding. Now, here's Elijah's response. In fact, you could almost call Elijah the father smack. At noon, Elijah began to taunt them. Shout louder. Surely he is a god. Perhaps he's deep in thought. Or maybe he's busy. Possibly he's just traveling. Maybe he's sleeping and must be awakened. Now, the whole point here is we see Elijah confident, full of confidence. In fact, at the end of the day, obviously, Baal didn't rain fire down from heaven. Our God rained down fire from heaven, burned up the offering, and Elijah had the 450 killed. It was a great victory. But we look in the very next chapter, and Jezebel hears about it. Very wicked queen. But one woman says to Elijah, I'm going to get you. And here's what Elijah did. And Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there while he himself went a day's journey into the desert. He came to a broom tree and sat down under it and prayed that he might die. He said, I've had enough, Lord. Take my life. How do you get from fighting and going against 900 prophets, having that much confidence to one woman, going boo, and you run off and you want God to take your life? How can that happen? Similar thing happened to Paul in Acts the 16th and 18th chapters. In the 16th chapter, we find Paul and Silas have been thrown in prison, but not before they have been severely flogged. Let's read in the 16th chapter. And after Paul and Silas had been severely flogged, they were thrown into prison and bound and chained. And about midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God. Suddenly, there was such a violent earthquake that the foundations of the prison were shaken. And at once, all the prison doors flew open and everybody's chains came loose. What a great victory. In chapter 16, we don't have to get any farther than Acts, the 18th chapter, when Paul is in Corinth. Paul, as he usually did, went to the synagogue to try to teach the Jewish leaders. And one of the Jewish leaders says some harsh words to him. Harsh words. Didn't flog him, didn't beat him, didn't throw him in prison, but said harsh words, and Paul quit. We know Paul quit because in chapter 18, God himself went to Paul. And he said, one night, the Lord spoke to Paul in a vision. Do not be afraid. Keep on speaking and do not be silent, for I am with you. And no one is going to attack or harm you. What was the difference with Paul? Nobody flogged him. Nobody physically hurt him. But he quit enough that God had to make a special deal. What was the difference? I think we can learn some things when we go through tough times. Why we have the ups and the downs. These are some of the things that what I call are faith eaters. These are the things that keep you from trusting God. These things here, let, like say let go and let God be your shepherd, are things that you need to watch for. They will help you when you're struggling during tough times if you're aware of these things. The first one is when you're lonely. Now, I like my alone time. I think everybody likes to have an alone time where they're by themselves. But I don't like feeling alone. I don't like feeling that I've got no one to turn to. I don't like feeling that there's nobody out there for me. It's a very vulnerable time for you. When you spend too much time together, if you're like me, your mind races some. In fact, I like to play play what-if games. Is anybody in here, do y'all ever play what-if games? Okay, I hate what-if games. Because when I start doing what-if games, the ultimate scenario, the finish of it is bad. And when I'm alone, I go all over the scenarios, and they always turn up bad. Why? Because when you're alone and by yourself, especially if you have great anxiety, depression, or even anger, these turn you inward. You can't see past your own self. You can't see that God is there to help you during these tough times. So when you're lonely, it's a time that you can struggle. And the other one, E, is for emotions. I think this is part of why Paul and Elijah had a problem. In fact, I heard it said, and I hadn't really thought about it, the great quitting day for preachers is what day, Mike? Monday is the day most preachers quit. Why? After a great high comes the great low. What goes up will come down. Your emotions will come down. And you need to be aware that after a great spiritual victory in the days to come, you're very vulnerable because your emotions will come down with you. You need to watch your emotions when you're very depressed or when you're anxious for the same reason that we just talked about. Because they will turn you inward. And T is tired, both physically and mentally. This may be our greatest weakness as a faith leader when we're tired. I don't know about you, but at the end of the day, if I've worked hard and it's been a long day, I don't have the strength mentally. I don't have the strength physically to do much else. And I'm vulnerable at that time. But the cool thing about this whole deal, whether you're lonely, whether your emotions are running way out of control, or you're tired physically and mentally, is that God knows where you are. He knows where your stress levels are. He knows what your limits are. The other end of the story about when Paul had quit, end of that story is Paul went back to preaching. And he was meeting with in the synagogue again. But Sosthenes, who was the leader of the Jews, got Paul, took him to Gallio, who was the Roman governor at the time, and brought false charges against him. Well, as soon as they get before Gallio, Paul begins to make his defense. But Gallio says, you know what? I don't want to hear anything that you got to say. I mean, this is a bunch of words about nothing. You're dismissed. But as he was dismissed, they turned on Sosthenes and beat him. Think in Paul's mind. I'm the one who usually gets beat up. I'm the one who usually gets flogged. But what he remembered was the promise from God. During this time, no harm is going to come to you. No one is going to touch you right now for this season. Because I know that you're at your limits right now and you can't handle it. It reinforced Paul and encouraged him. God knows exactly what your limits are. This verse here, and it's at the end of the fourth verse, "For you are with me." Your ability to handle tough times has everything to do with what you believe about that verse right there. Who you think that God is. Let's go through a little exercise, if you would. And just work with me a little bit. What I want you to do is if you close your eyes for just a second. Just close your eyes, if you would. And what I want you to do as you close your eyes, I want you to visualize God right now. Just look at God in front of you, standing in front of you. I want you to look at Him. Is God standing far away from you, or is He close to you right now? Look at God's face. Is God smiling at you? Or is He frowning at you? Does He look like He's frustrated with you? Look at God's body language in front of you. Are His arms open to you? Are His arms closed now? You can open your eyes up. If you see God and He's not close, if you see God and He doesn't have a smile on His face, if you see God in His body language, arms crossed, not inviting to you, man, you've got the wrong image of a God, of my God, or our God, right now. And what you've got to understand, it doesn't matter how you feel. What you've got to understand is how God feels about you. In Romans 8, 38, 39. God's absolute love is written. For I'm convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord. God's love for you is absolute. It doesn't matter what you're feeling. The truth is, His love is absolute. And probably my favorite verse in all Scripture is Zephaniah 3:17. The Lord your God is with you, and He is mighty to save. He will take great delight in you, and He will quiet you with His love, and He'll rejoice over you with singing. Now, how cool is that? It's not me singing to God. God's singing over us. Anybody remember Snoopy? Some of you are old enough. I know you are. Remember when Schroeder would play and Snoopy would dance with his nose up? I almost see God doing that for us, singing over us. He loves us that much. He cares for us that much. He wants to be around us that much. And until we get that vision of God, then that other verse is, for you are with me, for thou art with me, won't mean much. You see, our problem is not that we believe that God is a big God. Again, not a great stretch. Creator of everything, of all creation. Did everything. That's not a big stretch because He's a big God. But our problem is that we don't believe that God can be small enough just for us. I believe it was Michelle Norman who wrote a song called Great God. And in this song, she's singing to God. And in essence, what she says is that, you know what? I don't need to see the walls of Jericho come tumbling down. And I don't need to see the sea parted. But what I do need to see is that you can be small enough just for me. We serve a God that can be small enough just for you. One that can hold you, that can relate to you individually, that knows your every hurt and your every pain. We need to begin to envision God being small enough just for us. About 2 months ago, I had the good fortune, and I serve on the American Bankers Association Board of Directors, and we had our annual convention in California. Spent 3 days there, and I'm going to tell you, it was three of the most depressing days that I've spent in a long, long time. In fact, 2 weeks before the convention, they changed the whole format of the convention because of the economy. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm so sick of hearing about the economy, it just makes me want to barf. I'm sorry. But they brought in new speakers and everything to talk about the economic outlook for our country. And it was nothing but doom and gloom from the get-go. The last day, the last three speakers in particular, not one good word. It's going to get worse. It's going to get worse before it gets better. Now, you got to understand, I'm the kind of guy that likes the glass half full. I always see the glass half full. I'm typically very optimistic, but I was like, ugh. And we had about 1,500 people in there, and it was dead quiet. But then the keynote speaker came. It was Rick Warren from Saddleback. Now, you got to admit, when bankers start asking preachers to be the keynote speaker, it ain't good. It ain't good. But what was so cool was, I mean, we're sitting there, doom and gloom, kind of going. Rick comes in, and instead of going to a podium, he had a chair in the middle of the podium, or the stage, and he sat down in it, and he was smiling. And he didn't say anything. He was smiling at us, and we're looking. He had his notes in his hand, and he puts the notes to the side. He said, God's calling me to do something different. So we're thinking, what's he going to do different? And he looks out over us and he goes, "It's going to be okay. You're going to be all right." He said, God is still God. And God is still in control. And you're going to be fine. And he went on to tell us in the next 20 minutes how we were going to be okay. But what he did for us, he gave us hope. Especially for the last 3 days, we heard no hope. But he gave us hope. It's like this weight fell off all of our shoulders. You could almost hear this collective sigh while he was talking. Everybody felt better. Church, we are called to do the same thing. When tough times come, we're the ones that need to be givers of hope. We have a world out there who has little or no hope. We're the ones who can give hope. And it was so profound what he did. And I'm thinking, I'm the Christian. I shouldn't have had to hear that. But we do. What I want us to do as we leave here, especially during tough times, and there's some of you maybe going through tough times, and the economy's probably going to get worse, and there's tough times to come. Go. Be an ambassador of hope. Go. Be a hope giver. I pray that you guys have a great week, and you're dismissed.